Deep thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Today I thought we would talk about bad apples. Sounds like, why? Why the hell? What are you talking about, dude? We all know them for sure, but so the theme of the show forever has been to rebuild the world from the bottom up. All right. When you rebuild, that means there was something already there, and you're going to rebuild it. Which usually means some form of demolition, reorganization, reevaluation. We're going to find out what rules we plan on following as a society. If we even pick a rule like common law, do no harm, well, we have to figure out what that means and how to enforce it. You all know this. But why did we have to rebuild it? How did it get all out of whack? Was it strictly a lack of understanding and an organic problem that was created by society? For sure, those things have occurred, right? Well, we didn't know. We didn't know cigarettes were lethal. Now, given the lack of sickness related to cigars, it's interesting that cigarettes, I think, did sort of becoming almost a eugenics program. You know, let's not make it out of tobacco, let's make it out of paper, and then let's start putting in chemical after chemical after chemical. So I think the chemists probably knew that particular one was getting more lethal by the second. The citizens didn't understand, and so they sucked it down until we've had an epidemic of deaths related to it, right? But there are things that we have done to accidentally hurt ourselves. All right, fine. This episode is about the other thing that happens, the bad apples. Now, wouldn't it be difficult to make an episode about bad apples? I mean, is there really that much to talk about? Yeah, there's bad apples in everything, right? Well, I think that we need to specifically explode this notion of a bad apple. We need to analyze how they occur, where they occur, and what you do when you find one. Because I think it's going to be sort of an advanced course, a 300-level course in your PhD of rebuilding this planet if you ever get the chance to do so. It's an upper-end concept thing when we start exploding the concept. When you talk about human bad apples, we know what they are a lot easier than how they were made. Don't we? A lot of times there are bad apples out there and we have no idea how they were made. How did Dick Cheney fucking become this? You know, a lot of the bad apples we refer to on this show as sociopaths. People who see themselves different than the rest of the population, which in some cases isn't hard. And therefore they operate outside of the distinctions and the laws that are held together by the masses, which they do not see themselves a part of. The sociopaths of the world, and there are several species of them, is that you, because of their neurotic nature, because of their lack of integration with society, they tend to inherit focus. Now, for a celebrity might focus simply because they are focusing out of a desire to reach a goal. But some folks don't have the choice. Right? They are usually odd people. They're in the first layer. The first layer are the outcasts. You have, and I am not criticizing any of these individuals I will mention. I merely think that they have had troubled childhoods in one way or another. They weren't accepted one way or the other, and that caused an isolation to occur, and thus potentially a sociopathic behavior. Now, some people will go into this and come out of it, right? And I mentioned a couple of these before, but we're in the middle of bad apples here, right? Now, there are many more than three categories, but the three that I recognize are the outcasts, the ass kissers, and the engineers, social engineers. In your outcast group, you might have someone like a Rudy Giuliani, who may have turned a new leaf recently, hopefully, a Condoleezza Rice, both extremely intelligent human beings. Condoleezza Rice is nothing short of a prodigy, but she's also very left brain. She's a concert pianist, but in a left brain way, not in a I wrote my own sonata sort of thing. And so once you're very left brain, you can be brainwashed very easily because you get your accolades through hanging on to paradigms, right? You're Rudy Giuliani. I don't know. Lost his hair pretty fast, has a little speech impediment. Doesn't have anything to do with his quality as a human being or his ability to think in genius manners. He became an attorney. I'm willing to bet there's a little ridicule there. There's a little bit of isolation there. Now, sometimes these people have no idea that they're being ridiculed. They're so innocent and sweet. I don't know. I think Condoleezza Rice, as I've read, graduated high school at like 16 years old. She's a prodigy child. So she looks a little awkward, you know? In one realm, she's very beautiful. In another realm, if you compare to all the other Malibu girls, she's not, you know, meeting those requirements. Who knows how she was treated? But when you're smart, I can just simply tell you from experience, you can become an outcast because you know things. It just happens, right? Now, your ass kissers are interesting. They typically grow up in very disciplined families. And when they go into their private sector lives, they always need someone to tell them what to do. Your Colin Powells, your other generals, and I'm just trying to think of a really good one. Colin Powell is a really good one. There's a lot of benefits and to being told everything to do, especially if what you're told to do seems to be overall the right thing in the end. You're like, man, I didn't even know, but I did this and I got an accolade. Imagine an actor. An actor reads lines off a script and someone comes up to them later and says, you're so amazing as that hero. And it's like the whole concept for the hero was in the mind of the writer, who could be the director, the producer, or just a plain writer. The actor just is either handsome or beautiful and was reading lines, getting the credit for being Luke Skywalker or Indiana Jones or whatever. Now, of course, if there's a lot of sequels, those actors will, through saying the lines, become the embodiment of those characters. But your engineers are your Donald Rumsfelds, your Henry Kissingers, your Dick Cheney. They have a lot of brain power that is being wasted. For whatever reason, they get it. They get the world as they need to get it. And then they have their own biases, their own prejudices. Maybe one of them's racist. Maybe one of them's just trying to be functionally sound when it comes to the population. Maybe one wants to save the economy. And they just become myopically focused to a point where human life doesn't have the same connotation that it did prior to them having these epiphanies, or maybe it never did. Maybe they always saw the bloodline of mankind just as a straight up functional thing, you know? So we have been blessed, in my opinion, and I certainly hope I don't have to eat these words. I will if I have to, but we have a phenomenon going on in 2018, it started in 2017, called QAnon, who, according to him, proverbial him, a ton of bad apples have been discovered trying to overthrow the United States government in just unbelievably blatant, and then in some cases unbelievably covert coups. Stealing our uranium to give it to people that would threaten us with it later. Using nuclear disarmament as a mechanism to steal billions of dollars to the tune of half a trillion dollars. Straight out of the taxpayers' money. Foundations that are pay for play, so you get a high level of status in the government. And then you can use it, you know, this, and rumors go back as far as, Truman extorting money out of people so they can get paid for their services for World War II. And the idea is that, oh, I'm going to make a bunch of people millionaires and billionaires as the president of the United States, but I get nothing but this pittance. And the answer is, well, you don't have to make all these people super duper rich, but it will happen if you want to create a goddamn war and you got to feed 500,000 to 1.5 million soldiers and move them all over the world. Yeah, there's going to be companies that are going to form out of thin air and they're going to make a ton of money out of this, but hey, how about just don't start a war, asshole? And then you won't have this big jealousy bubble and you won't do extortion, bribes. So I will tell you that if you adopt the notion of bad apples being sociopaths and put them in the category of your prodigy child that was treated poorly as a kid, then kind of got to the point where they said, you know, screw all you people. You treated me badly. You're now my enemy. I will destroy you. That's Obama's big thing, right? He had a drop of black blood in him, and he is now hating all the white men. And his brothers, who are from Kenya, are pitch black, and they're like, you have no clue what it's like to be really discriminated against, okay? Then you have your ass kissers, the guys that have to be told everything, or otherwise they don't know what they're doing. Usually those people become military or finance, you know, some sort of person that never makes a decision for themselves. Some of them pretend like they do, which is really funny. And then you have your social engineers, your uber geniuses that are just nuts, just fucking crazy compared to our standards of life. And it's sort of one of these things like the threshold between insanity and brilliance. They live on that threshold every day of their lives, right? Once you can see the world through those three filters, when you're evaluating what you believe to be bona fide bad apples in society, it'll help you deal with your resolution of them, their existence on this planet. But we're in a state now where we have to find the bad apples. We do. If we don't, then this is going to repeat forever and ever and ever. And it may repeat forever and ever and ever anyway, right? But at least we'll know what's going on. And we can build automated systems to find them, right? What we want to do is fix things by design. Let me give you an example. You know that most of us in the world live on a fiat currency system, meaning it's not backed by anything. It's all made up. Banks just literally put digits into a computer and make money out of thin air. It doesn't exist. You stay poor, they stay rich because they have the privilege by simply knowing where to type in the digits to create money from nothing. We call it quantitative easing in this country. Now, you guys have heard of scams back in the day. There was a movie, Office Space, which did a reprisal of it. I think it was the second Superman, the third Superman with Richard Pryor. Richard Pryor was a hacker. And, you know, there's when you have billions of transactions happening every day, if you can siphon off a fraction of a penny, then you can and deposit that into account. Eventually, the fractions add up to money. And over the course of 10 years, you might be able to come away with $1 million+. No one notices because it's a fraction of a percent. Now, those scams are long over, all right? Anyone pulling that scam is just kidding themselves. But how would we fix that problem? It only happened in America that I know of in the 70s. It may have technically happened in the 60s, but I think it was mainly a 70s, early 70s scam. It was like three guys got together, I think 73 or something like that. But we diluted our money so much that they were then buying things with thousands of dollars of United States money when we used to buy it with tens of dollars. And what do I mean? Okay. So my grandparents used to brag that they could go out to dinner and a movie for about 15 cents. 15 cents. You can fit that in your pocket, right? A couple coins. Two or three coins. A dime and a nickel, whatever. Three nickels, depending on, you know, dinner's a dime. And then movie's a nickel. I mean, Jesus, doesn't that sound awesome? But what have we done? Well, the game that we keep playing to make people rich is that, we don't play it, but we allow it to be played around us, is that they keep inflating money. Meaning, they keep dividing it and dividing it and dividing it to the point where all kinds of skimming scams can occur. Now, if you wanted to take one penny from my grandfather in whatever, 1932, he's courting my grandmother, they're going out for 15 cents, and I steal a penny from my grandfather, don't you think he'd notice? Because what is that in today's money? Today it costs about 30 bucks to go to the movie theater. It costs you anywhere from 40 to 60 bucks in California to go to dinner. So I am stealing about a $10 note out of my grandfather's wallet. He's going to notice. But today, if he was still alive and spending the nearly $100 for the evening, and I stole a penny out of his wallet or pocket or whatever, change drawer, he's never going to notice. I could steal a quarter, 25 times that amount of money, right? So if we ever replace our money, I wrote a paper on this 10 years ago, I think that deflating our currency count is absolutely mandatory. It doesn't change how much money you have in any way, shape, or form. It just means that a penny's worth a hell of a lot more. Now your current printed currency and coins would not be eligible for this deflation. We'd make all brand new units. But imagine instead of making $100,000 a year, you make $1,000 a year. Instead of paying $150 for a fabulous dinner and a movie or a theater ticket, you're back to a nickel for each one of those things. 15 cents for the whole night. Now by design, anyone siphoning fractions of a penny off of a transaction at a bank, boy, the bank's going to notice real fast, right? Because a fraction of a penny is a shit ton of money when you're deflated down to decent levels. The carpool lane of California, if you drive in it and you get caught, it's $341. First thing I think of when I see that $1 is how much that $1 is worth when the entire state's penalties are tallied. It's a shit ton of money, I bet you. It's probably not worth $1 million a month because I doubt we have 1 million violators a month, but it's probably worth several hundred thousand. I bet we have 100,000 violators in carpooling a month, all the highways in California. Sure. They're not everywhere, but it's out there. So how do you fix bad apples by design? Well, bad apples typically have one thing in common is that's their source of education, the source of their surname, the source of their relationships. It's very, very rare that a bad apple will simply manifest out of thin air and go, I was a good person and now I'm a piece of shit that destroys society. No, they have comrades. They have leadership. They have mentorship. They engage in certain philosophical study that is either pro or against life in general, freedom in general, the Constitution in general. If someone's running around thinking that they're utterly prosecuted by one way or another, they're gay and they think the whole world hates them because they're gay. They're not white and they think that there's white privilege and they're being repressed. Okay. Well, you can see by design their preferences and their biases for what needs to be fixed and what is okay. And then we can take those biases, study what we believe to be the true problems of this country, and see if we actually need that help, right? You know, America, we're a melting pot, right? I mean, Europe's only recently become a true melting pot where they're pushing each other together. Again, we're never going to agree on what needs to be fixed in general. But a bad apple is someone who is serving the few to benefit the few at the expense of the masses, right? Of the many. The bad apples happen in your work, on your neighborhood, in your neighborhood, when you walk down the street of your favorite town. You'll have people that are jerks and people that are nice. Luckily, the state of affairs, at least where I've been in life, most people are nice. Even cities like New York that are rumored to be so brutal. You know, you kept hearing like a lot of the first comedians of the world came out of New York stand-up. And a lot of the stand-up of the world was like, we're tough, we're mean, and you know you don't talk to anybody in this. And believe me, there are areas in New York where, you know, I wouldn't just walk down a street at night, but... The weird thing was is that as I started meeting New York friends of mine, they had the biggest hearts on planet Earth. They were the most loyal. They were the most stand-up. They're lifers. I mean, we're literally family members. And so I'm sitting there looking at them, and they come from the toughest neighborhoods in New York. And I'm sitting there going, why do you guys, or how are you so nice, but you guys tell me that where you come from is so mean? Are you literally... going back to Cali, you know, you're escaping New York because you're nice? I smoke at smoke lounges. Well, smoke lounges have lots of people from New York come through because New York is so fucking upside down, right? They're, what is it, their DEA or attorney general is like some fucking woman beater, for Christ's sake. But I meet them and they're the nicest, most intelligent, like wise people. Like New York makes wise people. But anyway, I go there twice. In like the last 10 years. Had the time of my life. And I'm not really playing the tourist thing. I'm really there on business. I'm walking the streets at night. I mean, I went out at 11 o'clock at night in Manhattan, you know. I've taken subways down to Little Italy and Brooklyn in the middle of the evening. And it's like, I never fear for my life, you know. I'm sure I could make that happen, unfortunately, but. We have areas of the world that breed wonderful people. We have areas of the world that seem to breed the demise of humanity. We have folks that come from places in the world where it's more functional. You know, like New York for me, in my experience with my friends from there, from my visits there. And I sat down and interviewed people when I was there. I said, yeah, what's the deal with this, your town being known to be so dark? And I'm here and it's like, you guys are... It's not like Disneyland or anything, but it's like, it's more calm. And people are more like kind of minding their own business in a really healthy way. But if I needed help, I could talk to people. And don't ask cops for a lot of help because they're very busy, right? You don't, they're not tourist guides for New York. You need help though, you know, they'll help you. Just be good to them because they take a lot of shit on a daily basis. But anyway, like I said, I lived in the Bay Area for 12 years. Holy shit. These people walk around, a lot of them, trying to be so smart and so deep and so spiritual. And they're sort of anything but. It's weird. I'd sit in a restaurant eating food. I'm paying a lot of money for the experience. Or I'm not paying a lot of money. Doesn't matter. And these guys would be protesting outside. Then they push into the businesses and they go table to table, you know, asking you the most confrontational shit you could possibly imagine. You know, if someone asks you about your opinion on abortion, for instance, or do you think Jesus Christ exists? Holy fuck, you have a 50-50 chance of answering it according to their crazy eyes looking back at you, right? Are you a Republican? Are you a Democrat? It's just polarizing things. But no one has any business walking around instigating, because it's just going to, you know, it's going to cause problems, right? I think the Bay Area breeds utter delusion in a lot of cases. But there's the functional layer of the Bay Area, the Silicon Valley layer, which is heads down, inventing, making things happen, making the world better. So you got that layer at the same place of the layer where you have, again, I've never seen more gay bashing in my life than San Francisco. But it's known in the United States of America as one of the capitals of tolerance for homosexuals. How's that possible? Those two exist in the same exact place. It's an interesting training camp when you go to it, because you're, let's just say you have no real opinion, and you go on, you go in that, into that region, and you see these people hating these other people, but there's nothing wrong with these other people. And you're looking at these people who are hating, and you're like, well, you're saying you're so righteous and good and you're going to heaven or whatever, and these people aren't. These people are nice. These people don't bother me, but you're fucking annoying me. I'm trying to eat a goddamn piece of pizza and you're up in my face. My point for mentioning this is that there are regions of the world that tend to build into their boring fucking lives strife. They live for these political agendas, right? I mean, think about it. Antifa, the biggest fucking bunch of bullshit, the most fascist goddamn group of people that have existed since the fucking Nazis, right? Absolutely, positively, the living incarnate of fucking fascism. Calls themselves anti-fascism because they're idiots. They're just fucking morons, right? There are states where those organizations thrive because their society is, I don't know, not so goddamn smart. And so they're breeding ignorance, right? It's usually some fucking weird culty person like a George Soros that's like just trying to upset the apple cart, trying to destroy freedom, to bring in fascism, socialism, and laughing the entire fucking way of how stupid these people are, that they're the cause. You know, we have, I think, rehabilitated out of a lot of the situation I'm about to talk about, but it's still true to some extent, and the people, the local leaders, understand this is a problem, and they're, I think, making a lot of headway fixing it. But, you know, when the secret alphabet agencies of the world needed a bunch of liquid money, obviously they brought all the drugs into areas they wanted to destroy, the ghettos. The ghettos were taken by surprise. It's a weird formula. A bunch of dudes make millions, if not billions of dollars reselling cocaine and heroin and weed and all this other stuff. At the lower level, the local citizens are fighting over corners. They build up two gangs, one red, one blue, to really take care of this jurisdiction battles, to further destroy the community, to further get them to kill each other. And so the community that wasn't raised in this, you know, the older generation, were looking at these kids going, what the fuck are you doing? You're complaining about everyone else out there who's not us hurting us, when the only people who killed my grandchild was us. And where are you getting those drugs anyway? Are you the one going down south to bring that? Well, don't you ever think about where you're getting it? And the guy's just looking at a stack of cash going, I don't give a shit what you say, old man. I didn't have this yesterday. I have it today. And what I'm able to do with my life is so much bigger now because I got the stack of cash. Fuck you and your kid, right? That's the way it was probably 94, the absolute summit of this era in Los Angeles, right? So the complexity of a bad apple is so multidimensional. You can make one out of thin air with simply dangling money in front of them. It's horrendous. So we have systemic problems that create bad apples. And we have, well, I think it's always a systemic issue for a lot of cases. But when you get to your social engineers, I don't think they're necessarily beaten as children. I just think they're really smart and they're super duper bored. And of course, once they're recognized for having a certain level of aptitude, they are pulled into these other organizations, right? There's a lot of parents that are super excited when their kid shows academic brilliance, right? Who wouldn't be? What does that mean as a parent? Well, your kid's going to do really, really well, hopefully. Doesn't always mean that, but, you know, most times it does. All right. What you don't know is the second your kid shows some exceptional aptitude, especially if they get put in a private school, they get into a gifted program, they take some tests, you'll find that these mysterious organizations that you've never heard of approach you with scholarships and all kinds of stuff. And you're like, damn, this is awesome. My kid is going to get the top education in the world. And you wouldn't be wrong that they're going to get a really good education. What you don't know is how that education is going to be applied. A lot of times, genius children come out of pretty average parents. For whatever reason, it just happens. The parents are good people, but they're just average people. They have good meat and potatoes kind of jobs. Nothing wrong with that. They created a beautiful world. They're probably geniuses at different things. But their kids will disappear into these organizations and pop out. Maybe bad apples. But maybe not a bad apple that is intentionally doing anything like your two psychopath categorizations, which is basically your persecuted genius who's always been ostracized. Maybe they're not attractive. Maybe they're just so ahead of their counterparts in school that there's just so much jealousy that they can't get it done. And then there's the social engineers. Not those two. Maybe just they're the ones that are, please tell me what to do. Maybe the child's aptitude is more left brain than right brain. Maybe it was going to be right brain. Maybe it was right brain. But as soon as they get inside these upper educational institutions, depending on the needs of those who are in charge of the planet at any one particular time, developed completely and exclusively out of bad apples, the child may be groomed to be left and not right brained, which is functional, logical. I've had several conversations in my lifetime with scientists and physicians or scientists that do surgical work, who develop surgeries, who perform surgeries. And it is amazing how sort of non-emotional they are about life and the loss of life. And, you know, they've got a good rationale. They're like, look, I can't focus on the emotional side of things. In fact, it's bred out of us in medical school not to get attached to our patients. You see that dramatized all the time in shows like House. And, of course, the big twist is that they did let their emotions get involved and stuff. Hey, man, I don't know what's the best way. I would imagine it's case-by-case basis. But sometimes they have humanity bred out of them, so that they may serve more efficiently. We've heard countless rumors about how we are referred to either as sheep when it comes time to follow, or cattle when it comes time for us to be slaughtered in war. The people who stay home from war are the sheep. The people who go out for war are the cattle, in the eyes of those who control us, right? Hopefully those that are about to lose that control. So where do we have control over bad apples ourselves, right? It's one thing to know the several dimensions that can come that can create a bad apple, sustain a bad apple, and identify a bad apple. But what can we do as a society to slow down their growth, slow down their multiplication and proliferation in society, right? Because we want to make sure that bad apples are pretty hard to create, and we want to essentially make them stick out like a sore thumb, right? You look at a whole audience, you put like 100,000 people in one of the biggest stadiums in the world, and they just stick out like neon lights. That's what we want. Now, when there's a lot of them in society, it sort of turns into almost like that situation where a particular animal overpopulates and they open up hunting season, right? There's too many deer, there's too many wolves, there's too many whatever. And they'll release the hounds, they'll release the hunters, and they will hunt those things down till they're just barely in existence, and then everyone pulls back and they can multiply, right? I would say that right now, in 2018, we are at a level of high proliferation of bad apples. What is changing, according to QAnon, and I would say this, even if QAnon were not completely legit, which I think he is 100% legit, he is doing such a good job identifying the true open source paperwork on people that have been against the people for their own reward, serving their masters in Europe, that it's going to be a lot of work. It's going to be, you know, like you coming to a yard that hasn't been mowed in a year, and it's got vines overgrowing and dead stuff everywhere, and you're going to make it look better pretty quick, but you're going to be at it to make it look like a Japanese garden. You're going to be at this game for 10 years, cleaning up the mess. And then you have to say, how the hell did it get this way? How did someone walk away from this yard to let it get so bad? And you have to analyze all those, you know, historical mechanics that allowed that to occur, right? I can't speak for other countries at all, but in America, we have had several things that have contributed to the disconnection between parents and children. First and foremost, this fake, you know, I guess it's a real movement based on a bunch of fake history, where the Rockefellers wanted to get the females out there into the workforce and tax them. Again, telling a female that having a child and raising a beautiful family, that's for suckers, you know. If you really want to define yourself, you go out and become some sort of industry worker. And, you know, all these fabled stories about women being repressed, not having jobs, being home and barefoot and pregnant. I'm going to do a show on What's My Line, and we're going to prove beyond the shadow of a doubt that that is just complete bullshit. If you need a precursor to how powerful women were and how employed they were and how brilliant they were, go look up What's My Line. Just say that into YouTube. Don't get it confused with the comedy show Whose Line Is It? Totally different. What's My Line means what's my job. It started 1951 or so, and it went to 1968. Women were 50% of the panelists, and women were 50% of the guests, both famous and non-famous, and you will see that women did all kinds of amazing jobs, all the way into their 80s. There's a woman that's on there that jumps off a diving board and 90 feet up in the air and lands in a blow-up pool as a belly flop. Boom. And that was entertainment because she worked at a grocery store. And that was the entertainment to get someone into the grocery store to buy food. And this 80-year-old woman is jumping off a diving board, landing in a pool. I mean, give me a break. But there's mayors, women that run complete battalions of military. You have hypnotists, you have engineers, you have women that are rocket designers for Lockheed Martin. The list goes on and on and on. Bouncers. There's one woman in there is probably a 65-year-old bouncer at a local bar in the Midwest. All right. But what happened was, is when this movement to get women to work as quickly as possible came about, and when they told them that raising children was bullshit, well, one, that did reduce the population of this country because a lot of people would seek opportunity instead of building a family. I think in the 70s and 80s, that was pretty much the smaller group of folks. But what did the women want to do quicker? I watched this happen. My mom was one of them, right? I got lucky, though. I got raised till I was probably about, 6 or 7. If you get a kid to 6 or 7 and you participate in their life, I think you can relax a little bit. But the moms want to have these children and immediately work. Like, kid is fucking 3 months old and is in some daycare. That's the game these days in America. And half of it's because they've also been taught they need stuff. You got to buy a house. You got to buy a car. You got to buy that big TV. You got to buy a sofa. You got to buy this. You got to have a full functioning fucking guest room in your house. But you're like 22 years old. It's like, are you kidding me? Why don't you relax a little bit? You know, have a kid and just have enough room for you, your spouse, and all the amenities in the front room and the front part of your house. And you want to have more kids? Well, you know, bunk them up in one room. Have a two-bedroom place, not a four-bedroom place. Reduce your need for income so you can raise your children. Novel goddamn idea. Don't worry about, you know, the other big one is, I'm just going to beat up the family for a little bit because it's fucked today. It is. And it's creating a bunch of shitty kids. I think it's starting to get better. But I think it's only gotten better because we've noticed these things. But I've got friends that are, or acquaintances, I should say, that are doing this, you know. One of the reasons why divorce is so huge in this country is that, one, we dramatize it on television. The second something goes wrong, it's the grounds for breaking up and divorce. It's just always the case, right? Never fight through anything, right? But the other big problem is that people are trying to check off a checklist when it comes to a spouse. Well, I just need this. I don't want to have to worry about where love's coming from. Check. Not paying attention to whether or not they have any compatibility at all with their partner. You know, these gigantic weddings that people have. Okay, if you're rich and you got all that money set aside, go for it. If you are not rich, hey man, you don't need to be blowing a bunch of goddamn money on a big wedding. Well, this is my wedding. And you know, these girls all fucking wound up. And again, it's just magazines and shit on TV. And they're going to jump 40 to 60 grand on a wedding. I mean, it should just sound fucking ridiculous, right? That's 40 to 50 grand or 60 grand or whatever that could have been yours through a donation so you can start your life. So you do not have to work and leave your child in the hands of someone that ain't you. It doesn't matter if your kid has a really good upbringing with someone else. It ain't you, and it needs to be you. There needs to be a bond between parent and child. There does, because it'll pay off huge in the end, right? But what is compatibility these days? Oh, they like Game of Thrones too. They love McDonald's at 2 a.m. Gosh, we're so compatible. He owns all the Coldplay albums too, Mom. Okay. Guys, do it too, man. It has nothing to do with your compatibility. You want to know how to get compatibility figured out between the two of you? Here's two exercises real quick for you from your Uncle Mark. Get a piece of paper for both of you. Sit across from a table such that you can't see each other's writing. Define love on a piece of paper. Define it. He defines it, you define it. Write a bunch of keywords down. Say whatever you want. Type an essay. It doesn't matter. In fact, if you type an essay and he's got four words, that's a pretty good sign. There's a might be a difference. I don't know. But compare what you think love is, right? Some people don't give a shit about love. Sometimes it is all about a functional marriage. That's even easier, to be honest. I don't know what your kids are going to turn into besides robots, but here's another. The second test is this. New piece of paper. Got your defined love piece of paper, fold in half. He can't see yours, you can't see his. Now, write down your purpose for being alive. Why are you here on this planet? What are you living for? Why do you get up in the morning? What's it all about? On your deathbed, what is going to have been your purpose? And then compare notes. And you know what? Do it with the third person in the room. Because that's where you can't bullshit the answers, right? In fact, assign the third person to grade the similarity between the answers. Scary, ain't it? Right? But we both drink Dr. Pepper and not Pepsi. That's why divorce proceedings happen so soon, right? And what I'm talking about is that kernel definition of why you exist, right? Yeah, sure, you're going to either grow apart or grow together. But again, if your trajectory is defined by your definition of love and your definition of your reason why you're on this planet is very similar, you won't grow apart. Yeah, you know. You're a person who hates sports and they love sports. Well, you're already looking at two trajectories that are going different directions, right? But maybe you don't care. Maybe you don't care. And that's good. That's how you're compatible, right? You're supplementary. Yin and yang. It's all good. The family is the very first step of all human beings either being raised or being abandoned. Now, let's just say, to go down this thing here, you're looking at this lecture and maybe you're like, well, Jesus, have I been a bad apple? Have I had some bad upbringing and I had some things upside down and backwards? Maybe I still got a couple things upside down backwards. The main thing is that to recognize at a later date and make a change and go, you know what? I was Saul from the Bible. I was a serial killer of Christians. And then I saw the light. And then I became Paul, a person who saved Christians, who lived for Christians. Ah. So I can tell you personally, having dug myself out of several bad behaviors in my lifetime, personal ones really, not ones that really affected other people much. You know, again, I grew up in a household where cynical comments were sort of made funny. It was like everything was sort of a stand-up comedy, like a Lenny Bruce kind of thing, but not in any tremendously constructive way. And so I had to undo that. I had to recognize I had that in me. I had to look around and go, hey, you know, I'm affecting people incorrectly according to my own standards. Then I had to focus and develop methods to stop doing it. And it worked. Still working on it. I work on it every day of my life. Right? So, bad apples. We make them through abuse and we make them through neglect. And in some cases, they just happen, right? But even your geniuses, your social engineer bad apples, it's still probably a neglect algorithm. They're really smart. They don't have any problem being accepted. Probably they're more handsome. It's like they have everything. They've been in complete control of their life. For whatever reason, they get off on the drama of control of others. If you just think about it, put yourself in their shoes for 1 second. Take like a Henry Kissinger, all 900 pounds of him today. Okay, so that guy is really smart, speaks perfectly good English without any accent. He puts on the fake German accent as we've been told by several individuals who've had full-blown, normal, fluent conversations with the guy, but he puts on the German accent for some goddamn reason, or whatever that accent is. But someone comes up to you, you're whatever age, and they said, you know what, we've been listening to you talk to people, maybe you got a vlog, and they're like, I think you have some pretty good ideas. Got this problem in the world, and you have been chosen to participate in architecting this thing. And the more promise you show, the more we're just going to release control to you and have you deal with it, because we're busy with some other stuff. You're like, really? Well, how many people are we talking about? And they go, well, the world. More specifically, at this exact moment in time, the relationship between the United States and the Middle East as it relates to earning money and creating opportunity for Europe. The bankers, not the people of Europe. They're sheep and cattle, remember? But they're not calling them that yet in your conversation. And so you feel privileged, perhaps, to be invited in on this thing. You're being celebrated for your intelligence. Didn't you want to always have your intelligence validated at some point? Most people do. Don't you want your life to matter? What if what you did every day mattered? Police officers, they must wake up every day if they're in an area that can use their help. They're solving crimes, they're answering domestic violence problems, they're catching drunks on the road. They should wake up every day and go, God damn it, if without us, there's chaos. Now, there's bad apples in police enforcement as well, of course. Some precincts incubate it, especially if they have attorney generals or scumbags who beat women. Or they're pedophiles who are mayors in gun-free zones, which are unconstitutional at face value, right? But there are people out there that create cures. People do surgeries on people. They save lives. And so it matters. They get, you know, physicians get this thing called, we call God syndrome, where they think they can accomplish anything. And they end up dying in their little Cessna plane because they thought that taking lessons was just something for suckas. But you start getting rewarded. And at first, it starts off pretty organic and like, hey, you know, we're talking to the Middle Eastern leaders and they seem to be kind of into what we're talking about. And then, oh my God, side A starts pissing off side B and everything goes to fucking chaos. And you're like, it was so easy, guys. All you had to do was follow this little guideline and everything was going to be great. And so someone walks in there and goes, well, hey, how you doing? You're like, well, you know, it was going well for the first 2 years until this asshole talked to that asshole and pissed each other off. And I finally realized I'm dealing with a bunch of children. And then the guy goes, yeah, they really do act like sheep, don't they? They do. They go, well, there's always plan B. You're like, plan B? What's plan B? We force them. That's what we do. We can do that? Yeah. That's what armies are for. Oh, yeah. Okay, so how do we do this? Okay, well, you know, what we do is it's going to take about a year to incubate up. We're going to convince their people to fear their people. And they have the biggest army. So we're going to also convince that leadership to follow our plan, of course. Once we have that locked in place, because we do control them, we're going to have them smash the shit out of these people. And that's going to open up the financial opportunity to steal all their oil, all their resources, or whatever, and give it to us. And we're the third group. We're the C group. That's how your paycheck's getting paid. Interesting. Well, they deserve it anyway. They wouldn't do what I say. Or said, right? And so when it comes 12 months later, they've incubated up all the propaganda to make A hate B, or whatever the equation is. And it's shocking all night. Bunch of champagne comes in the boardroom where you are. The big giant 100-inch television's there with HD war, 8K monitor, full surround sound. You're getting everything. You're getting every camera of every freaking Tomahawk missile, guided missile. You're the best show in town. You have gone from being a normal good person to a bad apple, potentially, right? None of this war is based on reality. It's based on some preconception about how people should behave, who should be in control, and where the opportunity should spread. But you've had bias formed in your mind by this other party. You've been defied. You've been validated in your intelligence, which means that there's this artificial knowledge in you that they should behave according to you. But they're sovereign human beings. But in your mind, they're not anymore. They're sheep or they're cattle. One of the two. And you've been converted. Life is so complex, isn't it? When one group thinks they have it right, the fear is that they want everyone else to be right like them. Do no harm. That's why it's so beautiful and so simple. Common law. You ask yourself, well, I've been validated. I think I'm pretty smart. These are my standards for me. But maybe it's not the standards for them. Unless you've walked in their shoes for a really long time, you wouldn't know what it's like to be them. It's hard to imagine that some of the repression that goes on around the world is something that someone actually would ever want. And I think we understand that there are definitely huge lists of things that no human being wants to experience. You know, and I'll throw in one that's a little crazy, but just so we have a little bit of contrast here of do no harm and how you would think that you could answer that question really easily. Of course, no one wants that to happen. I'm going to say it my own bias, but there are people that achieve a level of, I think, mental instability where they mutilate themselves physically in order to bring pleasure because they're addicted to the high of the mutilation. You know, young kids, I think 10 years ago, were really into the slashing thing. They cut themselves. Sometimes it's just to get attention. A lot of times it's to get attention, but sometimes they'll just do it in quiet and hide the scars, and they don't want anyone to know. It's a personal thing, right? But every single thing that one could do to oneself physically, people do it on a daily basis because we have lost connection with each other. They would get it from somewhere else, that stimulant, if they just simply had choices. But in their mind, they don't have choices. We know they do, but they don't think they do. If the second someone colors their hair orange and we disassociate from them because we think orange hair is stupid, that's stupid. You know, someone's gay. All right. Maybe you don't agree with that lifestyle, but do you really have to excommunicate the person? They're not hurting you, right? I suppose they could. They could come after you, but that's a different type of person. That's a one in a million person who's crossing lines. It's just as bad as rape in the heterosexual world, right? But of course, the substrate is, how are we supposed to be, you know? And we get these groups that get militant about being accepted. They want to force you to accept them. They get more chaotic as time goes on. And they are actually hurting themselves. They get bad educations or no education. They don't work. They want to have welfare forever. They want to suck off the dole. You know, Europe is very kind with their citizens and providing welfare. It's sort of like the thing I've mentioned several times where the parent messes up the kid by ignoring them or whatever. The kid can't sustain life. They can't pay rent or anything like that. So the parent just keeps shoveling money into their child so that the neighbors don't know that they, the parent, have messed up a child. Because it's part of your report card in society. Well, how are your kids? Right? That's why when people have really stable, amazing, humble, brilliant children, we look at them and we say, wow, that individual, that mother, that father really has their stuff together. Their kids are off, you know, getting DUIs and running into pedestrians and killing them. Not so much for that parent, right? But it happens. Don't take any offense if you've had these things happen to you. Sometimes kids just run away from you. Sometimes, again, we get sucked into the system and we're victims of everything that I've said. You don't necessarily need to persecute yourself. Just understand you were a victim of it and you can make big changes. Sometimes it feels like it's too late. Usually isn't, but sometimes you can't rush the fix, right? You just have to be consistent, have patience. And maybe it works itself out, you know, sometimes. We have bad apples all over the place. All over the place. We don't want to create witch hunts. Our job would be to, one, paralyze the problem. To start engaging our kids, start talking to them, get into their day, realize that even though they're children, to them, their problems are just as big as your problems. I've said this recently in another episode. Okay. We don't always have to lynch a bad apple. It just depends on how invested they are in their deeds. We know politicians that are walking around right now, ex-politicians, heads of state, heads of agencies that are super bad apples and are engaging in extremely, I don't want to say nefarious, but I just did, but you know, evil shit. And they're committed to that until their last days. And perhaps those are the folks that go off to Gitmo. I think there are plenty that aren't like that. They're just lost. They need alternatives to what they're doing. And sometimes it could be a hug. Sometimes it could be a phone call. You know, dude, I was just thinking about you, man. I didn't want to send some bullshit text through Facebook. I just wanted to see how you're doing. It could make the difference in the world. They're just like, oh my God. You know? Thanks for calling. Oh yeah. Life is weird, you know? And if you know they're in a bad place, maybe the phone call isn't about what are you doing right now, so they have to kind of dodge bullets like, well, you know, maybe they just got out of jail and they're probation and they don't want to talk about it. So you just focus on something that's just basic. Talk about your past maybe you had when things were good. Be a distraction in a good way. Enable them to remember when things were better. That's what they need to be focusing anyway, right? I just think there are mechanisms to undo bad apples that aren't completely destroyed. They can heal themselves, turn back into a good apple, right? I think you feel me. This just dawned on me the other day because I feel like we have a lot of stuff to clean up and a lot of different angles to come at it from, right? If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. There's audio, video, locked Facebook group, and a Patreon page. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.